Welcome back to News and Views. Joel Heitkamp, your host. We're talking about how big is too big of a footprint for the amount of people that you have to have in a metro area. I was reading an email that I received over the weekend from Mike Williams that talked about goals versus reality. And Fargo City Commissioner Mike Williams is with us right now. Mike, good to have you back in studio.
How are you, Joel?
Doing well. I want sunshine.
I know. Is that too much to ask? I do, too. And the river's at flood stage.
I can tell you this. It's going to go up.
It's been raining. You got 2 inches down at Rutland.
The whole drive up this morning, the interstate ditches are plumb full.
Yeah.
I mean, and I found out that the gutters on my house still have all that fall, you know.
Good.
And Sue was in San Diego, so I couldn't convince her to climb on the roof while I said, I'll catch you, honey.
That scooping material there, it doesn't blow out when it's like that.
No,
that
it does not work. Yep. Mike, you got my attention here. And the reason you got my attention is because you say that Fargo is growing at a rate of 4 people per acre to meet that projection of, and I think you're already going to get there before this, 240,000 people by 2040. But you're saying that the footprint is pretty broad versus the goal of 9 people per acre.
Well, actually, the current what we have right now is less than 4 people per acre. Our stated goal in our land development goal is 9 people per acre. So where we're at currently is less than 4, and our goal is 9. So we have 48 sections of land. When you figure that out, that's 30,720 acres. You divide the population by that, and it comes to about 3.6 people per acre for 112,000 people. Our goal is 9 people per acre. So if you do the math there and multiply 9 people per acre times 30,720, you'll have about 240,000 people. So my point is that we don't have to get a lot more land to achieve the 9 people per acre goal and to meet the needs of 240,000 people.
What do towns like Sioux Falls and Duluth and Bismarck have?
Actually, they're similar. And you know, to put it in perspective, you know, people think they hear density and they think high rises like New York City or something. What 9 people per acre looks like is in our older established neighborhoods, like where I live by Clara Barton. You have about quarter acre lots, and you have about 9 people living in 4 houses on those quarter acres. That's what we have in our older established neighborhoods. It's just been recently when we've started to expand more and more land for lower and lower density. And I think it's a trend that we want to at least address and see how do we make best use of the existing infrastructure that we have before we continue to expand.
But I would argue some of this is already taking place. I think that some of the die has already been cast to what you want to do. I go to some of the new neighborhoods and I see huge lots. I see tons of money put into storm sewer, curb and gutter. I mean, is this trend even reversible, Mike?
It's you can always do better. And so there's things called sprawl repair. And one thing that you do is you start to target where do you want to encourage development. You get what you incent. And we've shown that downtown where we have the Renaissance Zone in 38 blocks. It's grown from $150 million in value to almost $700 million in value now. And there's 5,000 people living down there, 20,000 people working down there. The banks are coming back. The jobs are coming back. The inner neighborhoods get a result from that. My neighbor sold her house right next door to mine. It listed for 4 hours for more than she was asking for. I live in a house that's 60 years old in an established neighborhood where it's 9 people per acre. When people come to town, we don't go out and show them Osgood. We show them those old established neighborhoods like 8th Street, the Clara Barton and Hawthorne neighborhoods, the Horace Mann neighborhoods. Those are the neighborhoods people want to live in now. You're right, though. There are we're on this trend still to work with developers to get the cheapest land and help them develop that before we develop stuff that's a little harder to develop. And that's why the incentives matter. If you get what you incent, if we encourage sprawl, we'll get sprawl. If we encourage infill and using existing infrastructure, that's what we get.
But it's a you know I'm going there,
yep.
So let's just get to it.
Sure.
It's a contradiction on your part.
Not really.
The city's part, not yours. You've always
I've always voted against the annexations.
No. I know that. And that's why I respect you on the subject. Don't confuse the two things I'm trying to get at here. But I am one who believes that the diversion could be done differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also one who believes that the diversion, the way it's designed today, is really designed as a development project. that it's meant to be allow you to continue to do what you just described you're doing in South Fargo, in the area around Davies High School.
Right, and my point is we don't know that the diversion's coming, so it would be, I don't think, very good on our part to keep expanding our boundaries unnecessarily because it's more to protect. So again, the incremental growth and advancing that, there are some things, you know, like Davies is where it is. But at least we have a line there.
But can't I ask you this, Mike? Sure. Why, if the policy of Fargo and the goal of Fargo is to not have all this money out there, you know, you can live in a population base like you just described, and you don't need to have everyone have all of this square footage. If that be the case, then why in the world is Fargo building a diversion that would meet the criteria of doing that?
Well, I think that you're looking at long-term comprehensive water management, and I've always said that a diversion by itself is not adequate. It's comprehensive water management that includes retention, includes in-town dikes. We don't know that the diversion's ever going to happen, so the first priority is to protect what we have with the in-town dikes. We're about 2 years away from doing that to protect us to 42 and a half feet. So that's our number one priority. In the meantime, they're continuing to work on the diversion. That's a longer-term plan. But that, then again, retention is part of that too. So comprehensive water management, they aren't mutually exclusive. And I've been different than some people at the city in that we're better together. And they all complement each other. Yeah. They're mutually beneficial. And it isn't just about floods. It's about conserving water. The biggest issue in the future is not going to be flooding.
Getting water.
It's going to be able to have the water that you need for your development.
It seems as though that's taken a backseat.
Well, not really, though. They've resurrected
in
Bill Guy.
In the public size,
right,
it
but
has.
Bill Guy's plan to pipe water, treat it once, pipe it down to the southeast in Fargo and Grand Forks, that's a great plan. They did it in Sioux Falls. They did it in the Webb Water Line in Aberdeen. It's proven that it can work. That's a good solution.
Let's get to the phone line. Steven, you're on with Fargo City Commissioner Mike Williams. Go ahead, Steven.
Yeah, Mike, the question I have is, don't you think that's one of the benefits of living in Fargo is not having that high density where when you reach out your bedroom window, you're not shaking hands with your neighbor?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the benefit of living in Fargo. I don't want to live in a density of 9, and obviously the market dictates what people want, and the market is dictating that they want more space.
Well, I think that the market's been skewed, and again, when I speak about 9 people per acre, those are neighborhoods that a lot of us grew up in small towns or in towns like Fargo. They're virtually the same as they were in 1949 when my house was built. We have 9 people per acre in those areas. It's not multi-family residents to get to 9 people per acre. It's single-family homes that are eclectic, and everyone's little different.
Yeah, but Mike, not everybody rides a bike to work like you. A lot of people need 2 cars and 2 garages, and they've got kids that have a car. They need 3 cars and 3 garages. You know what I mean?
And that's exactly part of the point, is there's huge value in better land use. So if you design your cities in ways that you don't have to drive everywhere you go. For every extra car you have, you need about $9,000 a year. So if a family that's having 3 cars right now lives in an area where they can walk to school, they only need 2 cars, they save $9,000 a year. That's a house payment for a $120,000 house. That's huge value.
Well, let's talk about the Affordable Care Act. And my Affordable Care just went up 30% last week. 30%, that's $300 a month.
Steve, as long as you're willing to come in with your old policy so we can go over it, I'll do that with you. But we're not switching topics.
But actually, I think that he brings up some really good points, is that there is huge added value by better land use. And like he says, nobody here wants to live elbow to elbow. But that's not how we grew up elbow to elbow. Being able to walk to school and walk to your neighborhood park instead of having to drive is a huge advantage, not only for the $9,000 you save. You don't have to have such a big lot because you don't need a 3-car garage because you're in an area where you're closer to where you work, where you live, where you play. So some of our zoning is really made that part of the issue. Is our residents now spend 27% of their income on transportation. That's more than 24% that they spend on housing. That is an anomaly. That's unusual.
Mike, when you get on an issue, you bite into it and you don't let go. I like that about you. If I agree with you on the issue, you know, but I will tell you, there's been times we didn't agree on the issue, and I was like, okay, now, you know, but you, I love the consistency that I get from a Mike Williams on issues like this. The Fargo City Commission races. This is shaking out to be one of the most interesting years I've seen in a long time. You've got commission candidates. Dave Pepcorn didn't even show up at a forum the other day to have the debate to be questioned. I mean, what's going on? Is party politics becoming the norm of the Fargo City Commission races now?
Well, I think it used to be, and then I think it wasn't when I got elected, and now it seems to be trending back that way a little bit. I tried to be a Democrat for a while. I found out that I'm not built for party politics. I really try to work with people on common goals, and sometimes party politics gets in the way of that, and it is a non-partisan body. So bottom line is, you never know who you're going to be.
You ran as an independent
for
the legislature.
Yeah, I did. I got my butt handed
to
me.
No, but you put your name on the ballot, Mike, which I respected immensely. But, you know, here's the thing that I'm getting at. I mean, there seems to be this underwriting current that the candidates that are being put forward, whether it's Dave Pepcorn by the far right, or whether it's, you know, Wimmer as mayor, whatever, it seems to be, no one knew Denny Walker's politics. I saw him endorse Republicans, Democrats, stay out of races, you know, and now you've got people running who everybody points to and says, well, there, good, finally we'll get Republicans back, get Broman Shankles back, we got him back, and then his wife can run around town and speak like Ms. Fargo, you know. I mean, is that where we're going back to or what?
I hope not. And, you know, I think it's great to have competition. I know I ran twice before I got elected, and I think one time there were 9 candidates. I came in 8th. I said, that's great. I didn't finish on the bottom and kept at it. But it's good. You know, even when you don't win, you have a platform. So I really do I want to thank all the candidates. And I think it's important that you have people that want to be engaged. Getting back to the land use thing, there's a point that I think needs to be thought of. Is right now we have 48 sections of land. That's the same amount of land that San Francisco has with 1 million people and that Boston has for 700,000. They have 32 people per acre in San Francisco. They have 22 people per acre in Boston. We have 3.6 people per acre, and our goal of 9 is a third less than San Francisco. But if we're going to continue the status quo to grow the way that we have been, to have 240,000 people, we're going to need twice as much land as we have right now. So if you think our footprint's big now, you're going to need to double it to get 240,000 people at that 3.6 people per acre rate.
Do you track your population well?
Yes, and we started to do that more often. You know, we couldn't just wait for the 10-year census, so we've been working with them to get snapshots in between. So in 2000, we went over 100,000 for the first time, and then at 2010, we were at 105,000. Well, now we estimate we're at 115,000. That's an unprecedented growth. Generally, we grow at about 1% a year for population, and now, right now, we're growing at about 3 times that rate. So we need to make sure we grow well, and growing fast doesn't necessarily mean growing well. So we need to kind of tone things down. We think about the West, North Dakota, you know, trying to drink from a fire hose with all the development coming at them. We're in the same position, and we need to slow it down. We need to analyze where does the building make sense first? Where do we concentrate our efforts? And we can do that.
I go back to what Steve said and ponder this, and I'll let you answer it after the break. You know, it's what the market dictates. And there are a lot of people building homes in Fargo, retiring in Fargo, and they have a lot of money. They do. If you go through some of these neighborhoods, Mike, there is a lot of money in some of these neighborhoods. So ponder that, because if that's what they want and that's what they can afford, is there anything wrong with that? Mike Williams is our guest in studio, Fargo City Commissioner. We're talking about the footprint of Fargo, and we're talking about the market, because Stephen brought up a great point. If people want it, why can't they buy it, Mike?
Yeah, and actually, I would say that we've been skewing the market, because to develop, if you just buy farmland, we think farmland's expensive at $4,000 an acre, but when you break it down to a per square foot cost for development, it's about $1.50. That's pretty cheap when it's $15 downtown. But one of the things, a couple things that we do to skew that market is the city continues to finance infrastructure for those developments. So the developers aren't using their risk capital for all the infrastructure. They're just building the buildings. We're putting in the infrastructure and financing it for them.
So should there be a surcharge on the big ones?
Well, or not do it, let it do it on their own dime, and we engineer it. So we engineer
that's what they do in Wahpeton.
That's exactly right, and that's not a bad way to go if you want to curtail some of the sprawl. And another thing that happens is we give two-year tax exemptions for any new house, no matter where it's built. And so when that started,
I remember when Arlette Preston tried to stop that.
That's, well, actually, they did have, they had it targeted, and that's how it came out originally. And then they targeted it for west of I-29, and that's what incentives are. Otherwise, they become entitlements. So incentives, you give an incentive for something that you want to see. We're continuing to incentivize sprawl. So those people that are choosing to live in those low-cost areas to develop cause high cost for the city and the rest of the residents because we have to pay for the fire, the garbage, the police. We've hired 70 new employees since the last annexation. That's $5 million a year that doesn't go away.
Mike, thank you. Thank you. You always bring issues to the table. Let's get to Rich Risford.